Take your industry insights to the next level by becoming a Restaurant Business subscriber. Go to restaurantbusinessonline.com, click on the blue subscribe button in the upper right-hand corner, enter promo code PODCAST23, that's PODCAST23, to get your first month of RB Basic for free. After promo period, current rates apply. Now, please enjoy this episode of A Deeper Dive.
Are restaurants becoming like Taylor Swift concerts? Well, sort of. Hello, this is Jonathan Mays, editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business, and in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I speak with Matt Tucker. He is the senior vice president with Squarespace and is head of the restaurant reservation platform, Tock. Tock was co-founded by restaurateur Nick Kokonis and was sold in 2021 to Squarespace. The company sells prepaid restaurant reservations to consumers as well as other things. We talk about that particular business and how the company is working to ensure that restaurant reservations do not become like online ticket sales that frequently go to brokers that resell them at substantial markups, much like Taylor Swift concert tickets. We also talk about general trends in restaurant reservations. For instance, is 6 p.m. really the new 8 p.m. and why is that? What are consumers looking for in reservations these days, and what is demand like in those restaurant reservations at the moment? It is a fascinating conversation about reservations on A Deeper Dive, so please have a listen. I am here with Matt Tucker. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jonathan. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right. So why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm Matt Tucker. I'm the head of Tock, which is a reservation platform about to celebrate our 10-year anniversary, founded by a guy named Nick Kokonis, who a lot of your listeners will know, who is the founder of the Alinea Group. I took over for Nick in January of this year, and Tock is a reservations platform that is used by about 20 million consumers every single year. We're in something like 7,000 locations, Jonathan, across not only North America, but 33 other countries. And we have a wonderful hospitality platform that powers reservations, experiences, ticketed events, but not just for restaurants. For restaurants and bars and wineries and hotels and private clubs. So that's who we are, and looking forward to the conversation.
So anything interesting that you see, like, first off, we're heading into, we're full throes into the holiday season at this particular point, but what kind of demand are you seeing right now?
Well, we're still seeing extremely strong demand. You know, we have really focused a lot for many years at Tock on experiences with our restaurant customers, and of course, we continue to see experiences be a growth area for our restaurants. Actually, just listening to some of your podcasts recently, you were talking with one of your guests about grocery stores taking over food sales, which I found very interesting. Restaurants have to figure out a way to differentiate themselves. And we've helped our restaurants do that for the better part of a decade, whether it's with the original idea of selling tickets to restaurants, which was, very focused on reducing no-shows, but experiences is something we've done for many, many years. And so we see a huge demand still at our restaurant customers for large parties and differentiated experience. But we also see standard reservations, continuing to be quite strong in the holidays. There are a few other trends that we've noticed, but we can get into that. But we still see very, very strong demand across our client base, across North America and the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the issues in the industry is it's sort of going rapidly in two different directions. So on one hand, you still have a very strong move towards convenience and digital and delivery and convenience and stuff like that. But then on the other hand, you still got people that they really, really, really want to have an experience. And I would say, this was happening before the pandemic. I remember talking about this.
Absolutely.
But this is one of those trends that the pandemic absolutely put on hyperdrive, because suddenly people were stuck at home for however long. And, you know, when they get out, they're like, well, when I want to go out, I want to go out. And so that they want to have experience, want to do something. And that seems to be really important to the U.S. consumer right now.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think you don't want to be in the murky middle here, right? So the likes of DoorDash and Uber Eats have, in many ways, sort of ruined the dining experience. You're going to get some cold sandwich or cold pizza delivered to your house, and perhaps it's convenient, and perhaps there was a point in which, you know, it was reasonably priced. Those days are gone. But if that's all you're looking for, then I think it's a problem for a lot of restaurants. So the restaurants that we've historically served, and we started in fine dining, of course, but we're well beyond that, they have to figure out ways to make it an experience for a consumer. It's not just about the hospitality. Now, everything we do is focused on hospitality. We have 500 years of hospitality experience inside a talk. We even have engineers who have been sous chefs at Michelin star restaurants, but it's beyond that. And so we are working closely with our customers to create a platform that allows them to do things like wine tastings or pasta making or, you know, beer tasting, whatever the case may be. It's got to be different, because if it's just a regular old meal, that's something that you can get at you can get now at a grocery store, as you've talked about in the past. You can get from these delivery providers. And so you really need to differentiate yourself. And that's what our customers are really focused on, whether it's wine tastings or whatever the case may be. It's really important, or the guest is just not going to show up.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we'd heard relatively recently is that 6 p.m. is the new 8 p.m. My theory is that 6 p.m. is the new 8 p.m. in New York, but am I wrong?
Well, I don't want to say you're wrong, Jonathan. We're just met for the first time, but you're probably slightly wrong. How about that? Okay. I think 6 p.m. is the new 8 p.m., but I think we're seeing that well beyond New York. I think because you have an entire culture of work that has changed post-pandemic, and that's changed the hours of operation. So there's more flexibility in work, which means more flexibility in dinner time. And so we see 6 p.m. across the board, across the country with our mm-hmm. customers being more and more popular. I think now some of that is promotional driven. Some of it is, you know, consumers believing or getting marketed to that there are better prices at that earlier time. And that's, you know, happy hour has been around since the dawn of civilization. So there's some consumer thinking there, but I think it's just the flexibility. And we see 6 p.m., we see faster turn times at 6 p.m. So this is great for the restaurateurs. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's also great for the staff. They're fresh, you know, they can deliver better hospitality. And of course, the staffing issues have led to, you know, less people in the restaurants from a staff perspective. So, you know, keeping staff longer is harder because they're not there. Paying staff overtime now is not necessary if people are coming earlier in the evening. So we certainly see this not just in New York, although we do see it in New York. I think it's becoming more and more nationwide. Maybe it's in the big cities, Jonathan. We can sort of agree on that, less so than some of the other markets where, you know, people have, you know, gone out to dinner at different times for a long time.
Yeah. I wonder if the commute has a lot to do with it, you know, because the thing is, like, if you're working from home, which can, you know, that is permanent, is if you're working from home, you don't have a commute, you know, so the person doesn't have to go all the way home and then get ready and pick up their family, whatever they have to do.
I think that's it. I mean, yeah. I think that really is it. And so there's just a lot more flexibility. That's it for me personally. You know, I'm in New York City. It takes me at least an hour to commute home. And so, you know, it's just very different. If I want to go home and, mm-hmm. and meet my wife, it's different. But if I was working from home, I could walk out the door and be in the restaurant much earlier and be back at home to watch, you know, whatever series I want to watch on Netflix. So I think the whole world has changed and led to these, you know, earlier reservations times. But yeah. You know, we provide a service for our customers sort of regardless. We have, you know, variable turn times as part of the software. So if you want to do, you know, slot-based reservations, you want to do flexible reservations, you know, we can accommodate that. But that accommodation, I think, is sort of naturally occurring. These restaurateurs are looking at different hours differently than they have in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what other trends are you seeing in reservations right now?
Well, you know, I think that this is, you know, just moving beyond a typical, you know, reservation is something that we have historically focused on. So yeah. For us, we introduced the entire idea, and Nick did it based on his experience at Alinea, prepayment. We still think that that is incredibly important. So, you know, whether you call it a trend or not, we believe that reducing no-shows is one of the most important things that we can do to help our customers. So that's something that we have focused on religiously at Tock since the day we were formed a decade ago. And again, whether that's a trend or not, I think is debatable, but it might be a trend because food costs have gone up, labor costs have gone up. There may have been a time, Jonathan, when you were less worried about someone, you know, walking in the door, you know, and showing up for the reservation. But today, mm-hmm. yeah, we see that across the board, whether it's fine dining, casual dining, elevated casual. So I think that idea of the consumer showing up for their reservation is something that we've seen for a long time, but we're seeing in different types of restaurants more and more so.
Has that sort of enabled like more demand-based pricing? Because we have heard in which like the hottest concepts at the hottest times of the day can charge higher prices, or certainly there is much heavier demand for those particular times.
Absolutely. You could do variable pricing based on time of day, as you're mentioning, but you could also do it by, you know, where you're going to sit in the restaurant. So if you have a nice hearth kitchen, you might want to charge more for the seats by the kitchen. You may want to charge less for, you know, just a regular table inside the restaurant. So variable pricing isn't just time-based, it's location-based inside the four walls of the restaurant as well. And so we mm-hmm. see that pretty significantly. So, we have focused a lot in our product about creating different experiences per table. And so it may be that you have an experience for a table for Saturday night, but if it doesn't sell out, you could just release it and have it be a regular reservation. So, you know, I don't think variable pricing is going away. I think how you define it, though, changes, and smart restaurateurs are trying to maximize, you know, profitability per square foot inside the restaurant. And that is something that I think everyone is focused on today. Whereas in the past, you know, when Nick founded Tock, I think his idea of, you know, variable pricing and, you know, prepayment, I think there was a lot of pushback and people didn't think it was hospitable and maybe sort of antithetical to how restaurateurs thought. But I think that some of his ideas from many, many years ago have been embraced more and more. Maybe it's a post-pandemic thing and people are just getting smarter about how they run and operate a business. But yeah, we've always provided tools to address all these needs.
Yeah. I mean, the pandemic sort of forced the issue in many respects, right? Had to force a lot of operators to start thinking differently about the industry, which in many cases obviously is a good thing, you know, because, you know, I will long maintain that the restaurant business for a long time was sort of too set in its ways and not really experimental enough and kind of risk averse, oddly enough, you know, given how risky, generally speaking, that the restaurant industry is. And once they get in it, you know, often tend to be a little bit averse to any more risk, which I guess is fair.
Well, certainly the pandemic, you're right. I mean, the pandemic did accelerate so many trends, you know, in casual dining, you know, digital enablement was up and coming, but nothing like what the pandemic did to it. I think you may know I was at Olo for nearly a decade as the president and chief operating officer, and we certainly saw those trends there. I think in the fine dining world, people have always been concerned about, you know, how technology would affect hospitality. And so that's something at Tock that we think about, you know, a lot. Do we get in the way of hospitality or do we enhance hospitality? And so technology can be terrifying. I totally understand that. But we think of technology as an enhancement for what the restaurateur wants to do and the relationship they want to have with the guest. Like Olo, we are very focused on making sure that our restaurant customers control the relationship they have with their guests. We don't stand in the middle of that ever. And so we think of technology as an enhancement to help restaurateurs engage with their guests all the time. But I understand that, you know, people are hesitant sometimes to embrace technology, and it takes a global pandemic sometimes to kick people in the butt to get that moving.
Yeah. But also kind of, you worked at Olo. I mean, you also kind of forced the issue with the consumer. You know, I mean, you had suddenly consumers had to learn how to use delivery. They had to use mobile ordering. And, you know, you could probably chart it on a graph and you see the, you know, mobile order uses skyrocketed.
Sure. It was much easier for consumers to embrace mobile ordering than restaurateurs, to your point, Jonathan. I think for consumers, they've been used to ordering digitally for a long, long time, whether it was on Amazon or anywhere else. It was really the back-end operations of the restaurant where it took a kick in the butt to get digital ordering embraced by some of these folks. And again, digital ordering is not something that's done in fine dining and still not done, but we can enhance the guest experience. And maybe it's just notes on who Jonathan is. Jonathan, you know, when he comes in, he likes to sit in this location. He wants this glass of wine to start the meal, whatever the case may be, so that the reservationist or the host or hostess, when you walk in the door, we help enhance that experience by giving that person notes on you in a very seamless way so they can welcome you uniquely. And that, we think, helps build that notion of hospitality that our restaurant customers want to have with you as a individual diner. That's a relationship that we want to enhance and not stand in the way of ever.
Mm-hmm. Can customers who buy the reservation off top, can they sell them? Can they resell them?
Well, I mean, they do, right? So there are resale sites out there. We hope that that is not done, but certainly, you know, it would not be materially different from what you see in ticket reselling for, you know, for a Taylor Swift event, a basketball game, whatever the case may be. And so it's unfortunate that that does occur because, you know, I was just talking about the relationship that the restaurant wants with the guest is unique to that guest. If Jonathan buys a reservation at one of our restaurants and you resell it to me, the restaurant's going to really not, it's confusing for the restaurant. I mean, I expected Jonathan to show up. I know something about Jonathan. You know, Jonathan, I'm going to serve you in a different way that I might serve Matt. And so you're really disconnecting the experience for both the restaurateur and for the guest at the same time. But is it done? It is certainly done. Now we provide a lot of software to help our restaurant customers not only actively discourage that, but we have things in place that can reduce, you know, the resale of some of those tickets. Now, not all of our reservations are ticketed by any stretch, but, you know, we try to do what we can to make sure that the restaurateur understands the guest who is walking in the door, who is prepaid for that reservation. And we know that a lot of our restaurateur customers are so adverse to this resale idea that they will not let you in the door if you did not personally buy the ticket. Some of them like look for identification from the guest, make sure that you are the guest you say you are. And that makes sense to me because they want to form this relationship with you and have you enjoy the meal and have you enjoy their hospitality and not have you be some mystery to them, to the restaurant customers. So the restaurant guest who resells it, I think that's problematic for most of our customers.
Is it protected against, like, I guess the concern that I always have with situations like this is that you're going to get these third parties that come in and gobble up all the good reservations and then resell them for a tidy profit, you know, which would have its own set of complications.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I think that that's conceivable. We can prevent that in our software from occurring. So without going into gory detail how we do it, you know, we can tell if that is being done. And so we have preventative measures in place to ensure that that cannot happen. But I think your concern is legitimate. Mm-hmm. I mean, many of our fine dining restaurants, and we serve some of the best restaurants in the world, from Noma to the French Laundry. And if you're going to open up a reservation that on the first of the month and it's going to sell out in a few minutes, are you potentially susceptible to brokers coming in, much like, you know, like a Taylor Swift concert or something like that, and buying them and scalping them? Absolutely. So we spend a lot of time and money and attention making sure that we protect our restaurant customers from that happening. It's a big part of what we do because it's potentially problematic. And yeah, we don't want, and I, more importantly than we, our restaurateurs don't want their seats and slots to go to the highest bidder, right? Like that is problematic. And, you know, I think people think of some of our restaurants and think, you know, it's for the super rich who can afford everything. That's not the case. I mean, foodies come in all shapes, sizes, demographics, and, you know, it's people who save up for an entire year to get that reservation and pay for it. Those restaurants want those guests coming in the door. They know that some of their guests have, you know, scrimped and saved to walk in the door to enjoy that incredible experience. And if it could just be taken by, you know, someone in the scalping market, it would be really, really unfortunate and problematic. So yeah, we believe that we need to spend a lot of our time and our product and engineering effort to ensure that that does not happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, to me, that's always an interesting question. I mean, I think restaurants, one of my arguments on, you know, you brought up the Taylor Swift thing. And, you know, I, my eldest son is an economics major. And so I asked him, I said, all right, how much is that Taylor Swift concert ticket worth? And my answer is how much ever somebody is willing to pay for it.
100%.
And like, and I'm kind of like, in some respects, Taylor Swift actually got the raw end of the deal because people are willing to pay far more for her tickets than she was charging. She should actually get the benefit, a little bit, the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Well, I mean,
you know, people were paying.
I don't know if Taylor Swift or any of our restaurant customers absolutely want to monetize their guests or their audience members to nth degree. I mean, I think there's something to be said for, you know, having demand and desire to go somewhere. And I think that, you know, hospitality isn't just about maximizing the last penny. Our restaurant customers want to do that. They can do it quite successfully. But I think there is something about, you know, democratizing the ability to get inside the restaurant. Now we see tools and other parties, not talk, who, you know, have a limit or you have to walk in the door and spend a certain amount of money. I don't suspect that most restaurateurs like that. I think they see a certain type of person walk in the door who can afford to spend that money. And that's not necessarily the type of guest they want sitting inside their restaurant. Yes, I think Taylor Swift and many of our customers could maximize, you know, revenues a little bit more, but we provide plenty of other tools to form a long-term guest relationship so you can maximize the lifetime value of the guest, not just that one-off experience or that one time that you're going inside the restaurant to eat.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, I mean, the key difference, obviously, between Taylor Swift and most restaurants, though Mr. Kokonis's restaurant's probably a bit of an exception to this rule, is that it's usually they're more frequent experiences. In Taylor Swift, how many times does she actually ever go on tour? I don't know, but it's not that often.
You know what's funny? I couldn't, Jonathan, name one Taylor Swift song. Unfortunately, I still just listen to Led Zeppelin and The Who. So, you know, but I suspect she could go on tour every single year and maximize her value. But restaurants, you want repeat guests. You want to make sure that your best guests come back all the time. And it's not about maximizing their individual, you know, their individual night at the restaurant, right? Like you don't want to push the dollar amount probably over a certain amount because you want the guests to say, okay, I'm going to come back. And actually, I think you were talking about this on a recent podcast as well. Like once you have in your brain that this restaurant now is ticked above a certain amount and I can't afford it anymore. I don't want to pay that anymore. I think that's problematic. So good restaurateurs, you know, with good guest management tools like Tock provides, they think about the lifetime value, the long-term value of that guest, not maximizing every single occasion with that guest. And that's why we focus on experiences too, right? Because that is something that isn't necessarily about a specific meal. Come in and make pasta with a chef. Come in and learn about shucking oysters, you know, whatever the case may be. It's just building that relationship. That's something I suspect Taylor Swift couldn't do, but who knows? Maybe someone knows better than me about that.
Yeah. I imagine that Ms. Swift is not terribly concerned with the ability to maintain a relationship with a customer the way a restaurant is doing. I mean, she has her own ways of maintaining relationships with her fans. You know, she's not concerned, I guess, about the data that you get associated with the ticket purchasing, like, say, a restaurant would.
Well, yeah, that may be the case. I mean, but for our restaurants, they think about it. Okay, so we have a meal and we can have, you know, lunch and dinner. We have the special occasions and experiences, but maybe we have a cookbook. And the chef has a cookbook, or the chef has a wine club, or the chef's doing, you know, something at another restaurant in another city that maybe you want to try out. So it is about the guest data for our restaurants. And it's something, again, that, you know, for Tock, that data is sacrosanct. It is the restaurant's data. We're not trying to monetize that as Tock like some of our competitors do. We give it to the restaurant. And then we help the restaurant form that relationship with the guest. And that relationship, again, we view that on a long-term basis with multiple things that the restaurant might want to do, you know, with that particular guest. Whether, you know, whether music stars do that or not, I'm not totally sure, although I think they do. I mean, back in the day, certainly, you know, I would go see a concert, I'd buy the program, I'd buy a T-shirt, I'd, you know, go, who knows what else I'd do, go see him in a movie, whatever the case may be. I think it's not completely dissimilar from, you know, how some of the restaurants think about engaging their guests.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have to say that this is probably the most I've talked about Taylor Swift. Maybe ever. Congratulations. Sorry. We're breaking new ground here on this.
It is embarrassing. It's just like the, you know what? It's she's that much part of the zeitgeist that even I mention her name and I can't, again, I don't know any of her songs, which is
she's a huge part of the U.S. economy in 2023.
Seriously, it's crazy.
Matt, this is wonderful. I really appreciate you joining me on the podcast.
Jonathan, thank you so much. Thanks for your time.
And that should do it for this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, which was edited, as always, by Spoons. Artwork by Nico Hines. You may find this and other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. And you may subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or, you know, just watch on YouTube. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening.